You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Broken records, the albums you wouldn't shut up about. Broken records, the music our guests can't live without.
Like Judy,
Barbara,
Liza,
Bette,
Betty,
Audra,
Bernadette.
We broadcast this podcast with hopes that someday we might get Patti LuPone. Broken record, broken record, broken record, broken record, broken record.
Welcome to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. I'm Ben Rimmelauer, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Daniel Nolan.
Hey, y'all. We are both so excited about our guest today. Pixie Aventura is one of the most talented artists working in drag, or really any kind of performance art or comedy today. Or tonight.
To say the least. I can certainly attest that Pixie Aventura is far and away my favorite drag queen.
Yeah, but she's really more than that.
So true. Seeing Pixie Aventura is more akin to seeing a great raconteur or a philosopher, a great mind like Lenny Bruce or Joan Rivers, more than just an entertaining drag show.
Although Pixie is entertaining for sure.
The house down. Can I say that?
Yes, I'll allow it.
Cesar is coming in to talk to us about Whitney Houston's greatest hits.
How did we allow that?
I know, it's not a real album.
But I mean, who's going to argue with Cesar?
Certainly not me.
Not I, sir. Anyway, of course we love Whitney and are thrilled to get into that.
Do you love Whitney? I mean,
fuck you.
No, I mean, I grew up on those greatest hits, but what does Whitney mean to you as a millennial?
My parents blasted the Bodyguard soundtrack in our minivan every Sunday after church, so...
All right.
Here we go. Sorry, strayed from the script just a bit.
Your version's better.
Yeah, but to be fair, and also in Pixie's defense, she had about a 10 to 12 album list that we could have discussed, but that was the one we kind of chose and went with just, you know, for the sake of time. But as Pixie herself says, she is a research queen, and so she knows so much about music and performers and has such... a massive knowledge and library of songs, as we see, and we see her, you know, perform and lip sync to them every time we see her, and it's very impressive.
It's funny to think about Pixie. It's when you say research queen. I mean, I know that's a term she's used, but it's so brilliantly integrated. Pixie's research. I mean, I think about cabaret shows where the artist would refer to themselves, you know, as, I mean, they wouldn't say research queen, but, you know, when they would talk about research, and I think sometimes they do that the wrong way and it becomes, like, academic.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Pixie's research, while it's scholarly and it's, like, depth and breadth and, like intellectual edge, it's not then, like, just sort of displayed in some sort of academic way. It's actually, like, utilized in a way that's really integral to whatever creative thing Pixie's doing, which is always really entertaining, you know, never boring, usually hilarious, sometimes really dramatic, moving, challenging, and, you know, just always fucking good.
Always good, and she's someone who can really... she has that thing like Bianca or... Bianca Del Rio. Or a lot of those queens who... Or Bob the Drag Queen. Like, a lot of queens who host nights.
Both winners of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Both winners.
Which Pixie has never been on.
Yeah, but she should because she would win everything, including All Stars, including winter season. But Pixie does that thing where she can really respond in the moment to a situation and read the room and in a way that's effective and smart and funny.
Well, and by the way, that's a true gift. I mean, it's so funny. It's actually totally separate from what we were just talking about, right? Like, mm-hmm. As an artist creating a piece of work, mm-hmm. Pixie is really in a unique class of, like, very few, like, cream of the crop people mm-hmm. that really, like, has something to say and, like, does her homework and, like, says it in, like, the smartest, most effective way, right? Mm-hmm. That's just even, like, what Pixie does before the show starts.
Yeah.
And then, during the show, you're talking about this amazing ability Pixie has that's also really rare.
Right.
And I'm not talking about drag queens. I mean, just performers in the world right. in general to, you know, as you said, just respond in real time in this really brilliant way. And that could be responding to something that happens in the room from the audience or just that sense of being in the moment and taking... I mean, that's why it's so exciting to watch Pixie do a number or a monologue or anything, mm-hmm. Spontaneous. Whether Pixie is doing something that's truly spontaneous that just happened in the room, somebody, I don't know, threw up, you know, on the other side of the stage or something,
right.
or it's something actually planned in the song, Pixie has that dangerous spontaneity blazing through her performances right. that you feel like anything can happen and you see the gears shifting and Pixie responding to situations mm-hmm. in real time.
And in her final epic segment of her show, Drag Suicide, you know, people throw these artists and songs at her that she's never heard of, but she still somehow in the moment performs to them in a way that feels it's entertaining and, you know,
yeah.
if she doesn't know the words, she'll do a funny, you know, bit that still makes it seem like it's a choice and it's always really smart and fabulous. So yeah, Pixie has been such an important part of my Fire Island experience these past several years.
Mine too.
And I look forward to seeing her on Mondays every week.
I mean, I didn't even really have such an appetite for drag shows. I mean, I love RuPaul's Drag Race and I, you mm-hmm. know, I've loved some of the other queens we're talking to in this podcast and their mm-hmm. shows and whatever. But I mean, we've gone to see Pixie do these shows in Cherry Grove that are, you know, they're just free shows at a gay bar. It's mm-hmm. just, you know, they're not, it's not even like a set piece that's, you know, I mean, Pixie obviously puts a lot of work into it, so it has the sheen of a set piece in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But it's not like, you know, Pixie doing, like, you know, the story of, like, you know, my dog getting cholera and stopping barking outside the window or whatever.
Right.
You
know? Yes. So, love her.
I mean, we're talking in such superlatives, and that is so appropriate, of course, to Whitney Houston, because, mm-hmm. like, Whitney is the voice.
The voice.
Who
do you think, I always think, like, Whitney, Judy, Barbara. For me, those are, like, the top.
Oh, are we playing Dolly Concert Kill?
Well, no, just, like, the top, my top three voices. Like,
really?
Maybe not the best, like, the most unique voices, of their generation, you know, Judy passed the torch to Barbara, whatever, and then, you know,
Barbara tried to
after Barbara
not give the torch to Whitney,
right,
or anyone,
you know. But it's like after Barbara, like Whitney was kind of the next truly unique voice, even though she only did, you know, The Bodyguard was kind of her only real foray into acting. She didn't have quite that journey that Barbara had, but she was. You know, they tried to kind of groom her for the whole package. And for various reasons, I guess, that didn't take. And that's happened, I guess, with a lot of pop stars. But Whitney is someone who has a truly unique gift that a lot of people do not have. Such as Madonna or, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think in terms of, like, Whitney and, like, talking about Pixie, because in some ways they're so different. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know... you know, if you're saying Whitney as a pop star crossing over to movies didn't even have the sort of, like, theatrical acting background that, like, let Barbara, mm-hmm. you know, make her transition or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pixie's the opposite. I mean, Pixie's not even, like, just coming in as, like, a musical theater performer who's castable in a role, although Pixie's certainly that. But Pixie is someone who creates material, right? And, like, you know, I mean, but... what they have in common, I think, and we really haven't, I haven't really heard Pixie sing, although I have it on good authority that Pixie's a good singer, but I mm-hmm. doubt Pixie sings like Whitney, because nobody sings like Whitney.
Right.
You know, but But Whitney had that authority on stage.
Yes, yes.
That Whitney had that command that, you know, there's a God-given talent here, mm-hmm. whatever that talent is, but that is an undeniable force.
Yeah.
And I think with Pixie, there is a sense of that, even though it's a totally different talent than Whitney's, mm-hmm. you feel that you're dealing with a formidable
presence. Well, and the thing about, you know, as we saw in the documentary, So Sad, you know, Whitney let a lot of other people direct her life, including her family, and that's something that's so, not, I don't want to say refreshing, because obviously Whitney was very young and a lot of it was not her fault, but, you know, Pixie's someone who has a director's eye. She's the whole package. She's a one-woman show. She's not just someone, like you're saying, who you cast in a role because she can dance or she can, you know, tell a joke. It's like she does the whole thing by herself. She comes up with the numbers, she comes up with the set list, she comes up with the jokes, she comes up with the stories, and she does it, like, you know, 5 times a week, and
so
she travels.
If you could take Pixie's talent and mm-hmm. cast her in something, what would you want to see Pixie do?
I mean, I feel like we told her this during one of her performances, but Women on the Verge.
Oh yes.
Or
didn't we disagree though? I wanted her to play Peppa. I wanted her to play the lead.
Well, I think that's great. I mean, when we told her that, she was, I think she had just performed
Laura Benanti's song.
Yeah. And so she was like, oh no, don't you mean
Model Behavior, whatever her name is.
And we were like, no, we want you to be the lead, Peppa.
Yeah,
so,
right.
And then she was like, oh, the lead. anyway, but she's fabulous. And I am excited for everyone to hear our conversation.
Yeah. Broken record, broken record, broken record. Well, Daniel and I could not be more excited to have our guests here today. The fabulous Pixie Aventura, a.k.a. Cesar Villavicencio. Hi.
Yes.
I'm wearing my Ice Palace t-shirt in honor of where we first fell in love with Pixie.
Oh, I didn't even know they had a t-shirt.
Go figure. And I've been there for 4 years.
You got to get it online. Yeah, totally.
Online?
Mm-hmm. Mm,
wow. Okay.
We fell in love with Pixie.
We're
in
such fans.
Her weekly show over the summer at the Ice Palace in Cherry Grove, but she has weekly shows all over the city and mm-hmm. soon to be all over the world, mm-hmm. and even digitally now all over the world on Scruff app.
I've been over the world too. It's fine.
All over the world, and we're so thankful that you're here.
Thank you.
We love your take on everything, and we really want your take on music, because we know it's a big part of who you are and your work.
Yeah.
And so let's just start from the top.
From the top.
With The Voice.
The
Whitney
Voice.
Houston.
Yeah.
And was not surprised to see her on your list of your... Most of our guests choose an album that was inspiring to them. Pixie chose, like, 12, which is because she is so inspired.
She's a curator of everything musical, and she brings it to the audience. Which
I mean, it's hard. It's hard to pick one.
It's hard to pick. Well, even the Whitney, by the way, is a greatest hits, not a
single album. Yeah, the first two albums are Whitney's greatest hits, which includes remixes of ballads, duh, a lot of Thunderpuss, mm-hmm.
yes,
a lot of Hector X.
Yeah, I was surprised how many remixes there were.
Right? And then, of course, also the Queen Platinum 1, 2, and 3 collection.
Yeah.
So I feel like both of those are just cop outs because you're getting the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't just pick one Whitney.
Well, that's fine. You know what, Whitney, I think, especially now that she's gone, mm-hmm. you know.
But we were still gifted with another song.
We were. Higher Love. I mean, a song that I thought I had taken my full journey with had so many adventures left to offer me. And I love when you play that at the show. It's so great.
Thanks.
Getting the word out there. People don't know. But let's talk about Whitney. So what was the greatest hits, the album that you actually played at the time, or does it just bring together the tracks from the different albums you were playing?
It's definitely bringing tracks from different albums. My first connection to Whitney was the Bodyguard soundtrack.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I would play that nonstop, and it was a small album. I remember that the case was thinner than normal.
Oh, really?
It was just like
was
a little...
Was it plastic, or was it like...
It was like plastic, paper? But you know how like CDs came in... usually come in like a thicker, like almost pencil.
Yeah.
Well, this one was thinner than that. It was just like, I don't know.
Get annoyed about that because they didn't fit in the shelf. Yeah, I like
organized, right. And you couldn't see the name on it on the side.
Right. Yeah. Whitney knew that, though. You know? Yeah. She's like, do the work.
So that was the one that I started with. And
so that was your intro into Whitney.
I just remember I Will Always Love You. I think mm-hmm. that was definitely the song. Mm-hmm. And I will always love you. 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 Me and my mom would listen to it all the time, and then I don't even know how I got the album. Maybe she got it, but I just remember sitting in front of the huge stereos that were at the time my height.
Yeah,
but it's like three pillars, like two speakers and the center thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's funny, and now it's all on our phone.
Yeah,
but yeah, that was my introduction to her. The Bodyguard.
Did you appreciate? I mean, because you were pretty young. Like, I think that album was. You know, you're not old enough to remember when The Greatest Love of All was on the radio.
Absolutely. No, yeah, no.
To somebody.
Totally not.
But, I mean, so at that young age, because I remember discovering Greatest Love of All when it, you know, was on the radio and all that, and I loved her so much, but I didn't understand technically, like, oh, wow, her voice is really doing things other people's can't do.
Right.
I think maybe later on I was like, why can't their voices do that? But I just kind of took it for granted how technically great she was. It was just, like, I think the... I don't know if it's like the balls or the like joy. There's something in the way she sings, you know. But you are a singer. I mean, how did you relate to her as that voice?
Well, I don't think... I mean, how old was I when that came out? I was maybe around 5, 6.
Oh, wow. little.
And I just think it was that endless power. Like, it just seemed like it would go on forever.
Yeah. It seemed so effortless.
Yeah, and I don't think I was just... I was listening for Technique. It was just, for me, it was just, like, amazing. I was like, there was just something about her. And then seeing her on videos, and it's just, I don't know, it just overpowered me.
RuPaul talks about seeing Diana Ross for the first time on TV, and he says it was like seeing a glimpse of God or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel like, for me, it was, you know, Judy Garland in Wizard of Oz.
Right.
Or for, you know, Whitney was definitely that for
me. I would agree with that. I mean, and there was other people that I had seen, too, and... But there was just something about Whitney that I connected to. I don't know. We're going to go deep. I don't know if it was like a subconscious like connection to her knowing later, like the crap she was going through.
Yeah,
like you can just see there was so much going on in the background.
Yeah.
And she was just able to push that into her voice and her talent.
Totally. It's like, it's very Judy. It's like, you know, that ache and the vulnerability comes through.
Do you remember... how you came across then her older songs at that point, or, you know,
I think just continuing to follow her after that and then being able to go back and listen to her stuff. And that's why I love this album, because you really go in the journey from the beginning to
home from the end.
Yeah. And you
Oh,
you can see the change in style. You can see the change in music. You can see how, like, she was first being told what to sing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, like, probably this... If somebody else would have gotten the song, they probably wouldn't have been hits. Mm-hmm. But the stuff that she did to the lyrics musically and vocally, you're just like, damn, girl, like, give someone else a chance. But it's just so easy for her. And
wasn't that Sissy, too, like, telling her, like, you need to sing this type of song?
Right, right. And you can see that because it's very, very classical, very gospel in the beginning. Yeah. And then you just sort of see the trend that she goes into R&B.
Yeah.
And she just doesn't really give a shit no more.
Yeah.
And not that she doesn't give a shit, but she's like, it's me, it's me.
Right, yeah. I think in the documentary, Sissy called it, we were preparing her to perform legacy music. And it is.
Yeah, and I always say this at my shows, and you guys maybe have heard it. Mm-hmm. Like, her music will be playing 50 years from now, 100 years from now, and the gays are still going to be step-touching to it.
Totally.
Did anything, I mean, so then you were a little bit older, like, when she came out with, like, My Love Is Your Love, and, oh, God, what's the really crazy angry one?
It's not right, but it's okay.
Take care of my babies. I mean, were you into that still then?
Absolutely.
It's not right.
Even towards the end of her life, like...
I love when you called out I Didn't Know My Own Strength at the show last week, because I love that album.
It is good, and you can... I mean, vocally, you can tell she wasn't at her peak, but there was, she's still a storyteller.
So much. In some ways, more so, because that's what's left.
You know?
Didn't know my own strength, and I crashed down, and I tumbled, but I did not...
I mean, and there are some really beautiful notes
absolutely
on that album. Do you, did you ever see her live?
No.
Me either.
I never did.
Is that, are these divas, you know, Whitney or even a Freddie Mercury or any of the other artists, like, you know, I think for both of us, and part of the reason we wanted to do this podcast is because they're such, like, fixtures in our daily lives, you know, the first name basis, and, you know, it's like spending the summer with Judy or Bette or whoever is, like, you know, we're obsessed with, you know, rediscovering a lesser album of theirs that, you know, later on and appreciating it, or, you know, do you have that kind of a relationship with them, or, you know, is it just something that you've digested and is just part of you and you don't continue to listen?
Yeah, absolutely. I like to call myself a research queen.
You totally are, yeah.
Oh, sure.
And when I love something, I just dive in and, like, I really want to know as much as possible. And I just feel like maybe there's undertones of underdog.
Yeah.
And I feel like in one way or another, they all were. Like, all of my I mean, not the musicals, but, like, my artists, I feel like at one point might have been. And I feel like artists in general, people think it's like overnight, and it's not. It's a lot of work that goes into it. Like, even for myself, sometimes I feel like people, like, come up to me like, oh my God, I've never seen you, or oh my God, like, your show is so amazing. I remember seeing you when you first began, and it's just, again, it's been a process. I'm still learning.
Well, let's talk about your process, because, like, I know that you went to Otterbein, but I just was thinking about you last night, because I was watching Handmaid's Tale. And, you know,
okay.
That guy, well, must be the fruit. But the guy that, are you up to date?
Yeah. Oh, like, yeah. I love Today.
Like, the guy in Canada that's doing, like, the interrogating of them went to Audubon.
Yeah.
I saw it because I was like, that guy's so hot. I had to look him up on Airbnb. And so I was like, oh, my God, that's Pixie School. And you must know the casting director, Michael Cassara, was
yes,
there.
Uh-huh.
I hope that he's given you some good stuff. He better pay it forward. I'm going to have a little talk with him. Okay. But
I don't think he knows what I do.
Oh, really? Well, he's got to know.
He will.
I mean, he's older than you, you know.
Still, he knows who I am.
He's fucking better. So you were there studying musical theater.
Yes.
And
with the dance concentration.
With the dance concentration. Mm-hmm. And
you're such a fabulous dancer.
Yes, an urban ethnic beat. So when did you come straight to New York after school?
I did. We did summer theater there. And then I went back to Miami for a month. And I told my parents, I was like, okay, I'm moving. And I was like, can you help me in any way? And my mom was very reluctant. Actually, she actually was making it the most difficult. She's like, I think you need to stay and write and, like, you know, like, work. So, and I was like, why am I going to waste my time working a job here to get money? Well, I might as well just suck it up and just go.
Yeah.
And I just did. I was like, okay. And then that whole, what's the 42nd Street reference?
Pounding 42nd Street?
No, but, like, how many, like, few dollars in my pocket? Some of it. Anyways, so, yeah, I came here for the enough rent for the first week. And
wow.
I mean, the first month, sorry.
Still.
First month. Brave. Which is nothing, because it was literally a hole in a wall. It was, like, right under $500, which is unheard of.
Sure.
But it was a hole in a wall.
And where was this?
It was in Hamilton Heights, 147 between Broadway and Amsterdam.
And what year was that, if you know?
It was 2009.
2009?
This is my 10th year.
You're just a baby. So were you like, okay, I'm going to get cast. What was In the Heights still playing? Was that like on your radar? What was the plan?
Yep. My auditions were In the Heights, West Side Story, and Altar Boys.
Wow. Did you audition for Arthur Lawrence?
No. No, it was... I didn't even make it through the first round.
Fuck them. That production sucks anyway.
Yeah. No, it was... Yeah, it was interesting. We're gonna get some tea right now.
Yes.
It was... I forget his name. Joey? The choreographer?
Oh, Joey PC?
Maybe.
What's
his story?
Oh, no, it's Joey McNeely?
Maybe. But his name is Joey.
Joey.
He was the one in charge. Yeah, I auditioned for him, and I could just tell he was looking right past me. Mm. Like, he wasn't even bothering.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, fine. And I went to the Ritz, and one of my friends were there, and she's really close friends with the assistant choreographer, who was in the room as well. And we're just kicking it. We're dancing. Some Latin music came on. We're like just dancing. We're both from Miami, so we were just whatever. It's in our blood. And his assistant comes up to me and goes, "Hey, have you auditioned for West Side Story?" And this was literally a week after. And I was like, "Yeah, I did." Okay, so, but yeah, that first 2 years, wow, it was rough. Except for that one, I would get to the end of all the calls in the Heights, and I became the reader for In the Heights for a whole year.
Oh, wow.
And just nothing just came of it. And
that's good that you were the reader, though. Obviously, the casting directors liked you. And
yeah, but
you.
It wasn't, because I was being treated very differently than the other readers.
Sure.
I was being asked to leave the room after every audition.
Oh.
Because they were bringing me in, too. So I don't know if they just...
They didn't want you to hear them talk.
Like, maybe, yeah, or an upper hand or whatever.
Yeah.
But I just never got far with that, and that's what pushed me to pursue something else, because I was just tired of,
Had you done any writing before that?
No.
And had you done drag before that?
I had done drag in college, but it was just part of a fundraiser we did every year. It was very much for fun. It wasn't a thought of me actually doing it in the city.
Where you had performed in drag?
In school, yeah. Since my freshman year. But I actually didn't even bring anything with me. And then one thing led to another, and my first place was Sugarland in Brooklyn.
Oh yeah, I remember it well. Yeah. I used to live in Williamsburg when I first
moved. Before it closed. And then that brought me to Vig 27. Uh-huh. It was on 27th and Park. It was like maybe a 3-year bar.
27th and Park. Oh, okay.
And then that led me to industry as a coat check girl, which then I was able to do a competition at Posh, which finally led me to be cast in Industry's show and then get a show at Barracuda.
And during that time, were you still auditioning for theater?
Yeah, I was.
And were you doing any?
No.
And were you frustrated by that? I mean,
absolutely.
Obviously you were frustrated, but I mean, you know, like, it's easy from the outside to be like, oh, you're so talented, just keep trying. Like,
yeah.
But, you know, were you past that point of, like, being able to, like...
Yeah, and we're talking about, like, it's a short amount of time, but... It was really frustrating. I know I don't feel the cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being told that I wasn't Latin enough.
Oh, my God.
And I wasn't green enough.
Thank
you. Oh, I was too green. And I was like, how am I not Latin enough? I mean, that's the whole point of a certain show.
Yeah.
All types of Latin. But okay. So I just drag sort of was there, and it was just allowed me to do whatever I
did
wanted.
You know, did you pursue that on your own? You know, was that in your mind, like, I should try drag, or did someone say, like, you should be in this competition, or you should try drag?
No. I had a survival job, and one of my coworkers did drag at Sugarland, and we were just talking, and I was like, oh, yeah, I ended up, and she was like, well, come guest, and I was like, okay.
Was Pixie like, always your name from the get-go?
Yeah, Pixie was always my name from the get-go.
And where's that from, that name?
That is from high school. We were just playing... I went to Performing Arts High School. We were just playing that. I mean, I think originally it's a stripper name. I mean, it's all like, what's your stripper name? What's this?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
Your drag name is like the first pet you had and what street you were born on, and blah, 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 blah.
Oh my
blah,
God,
blah.
So that's what that is?
That's what it is.
Wow. You grew up on Aventura?
No, the streets in Miami are numbered, so I had to pick a neighborhood that made sense with me and my name.
But that's what makes it great. Like,
yeah.
I knew Aventura from, like, visiting my grandparents, you know, and it has a quality about it.
So when I started in college, I didn't think this would be a career, and I was like, I already have a name.
Yeah.
And then it just was there.
It stuck. But it's so perfect.
Thank you. I also don't like witty names.
You don't like what?
Witty names.
Like pun drag queen names, because I'm just like, yay, the joke is there, and we're done.
Do you like start to identify as Pixie? I mean, is, you know, people calling you that and being known for that, you know, do you feel like there's like any kind of like anonymity behind that for Caesar?
Yes and no. It took a while, not only for me to sort of grasp what I was doing, because YouTube was maybe just coming up. So nobody really knew what to do with that. Now I feel like there's an educational video for anything.
Yeah, for sure.
But so for me, I've never hidden Caesar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's old school drag queens that literally you never see out of drag.
Lady Bunny.
Yeah.
I mean, I see her.
Yeah.
You would probably be walking next to her and you don't know who it is.
No, right. You've seen Bunny out of drag.
We've seen her out of drag, but most people haven't.
Yeah. And it's a very old school thing, and you didn't even know her boy name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now I feel we've gotten to this world where you, especially through Drag Race, that you see people in and out of drag and the other names as well.
Right.
But I've never hidden myself, even my Instagram and my social media.
Mm-hmm.
It's me. I'm.
Yeah.
It's both people.
Mm-hmm. And you post a lot of stories, and you talk to your followers and stuff as Caesar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get in drag to a little 5-second video.
Do you still have a desire to perform as Caesar or in character out of drag and do other kinds of
Absolutely.
Material?
Ironically, as soon as I started doing drag, I was getting the calls to come in and do that.
Of course.
And do workshops and whatnot. And
have you said yes to those things?
Yeah, at the very beginning, yeah. But now, I like to say I can be picky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
because
great.
I'm just not going to do a project that I don't really connect to.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of people ask me, like, do you still audition? I was like, there is nothing really out there that I'm like, I want to put energy in that.
Right, excited by.
Not for me, at least. I feel I still, just because I'm a drag queen doesn't mean I have to be in a drag queen show.
Right.
It's not the same.
Right. Sure.
Right.
Now, like, you know, but there, I do, think about, you know, when you talk about not fitting in the box, you know, I mean, that's such a common thread for queer people as performers, you know, and it's like, and I think that's why, you know, it's so important for so many people who have been marginalized to write the stories and, you know, and create the content.
Mm-hmm, totally.
And, you know, and you just seem like someone, you know, even just, even lip syncing a song just for 25 seconds without the context, and you give so much context, but I mean, even just 20 seconds of you lip syncing it, there's so much story and character. And then you actually create this like really rich context with these medleys and the dialogue that's cut into it. And it all seems to really come from the same point of view, and persona that you have just talking, you know, off the cuff to the audience. And so that seems so well conceived and thought out. And it, do you think about creating things that are with, I don't want to say necessarily more performers, because there's lots of different ways, you know, what you do could grow that doesn't just mean more people. But for example, with more people, do you see taking, doing work on a different level other than just more successfully, you know, more, other than a bigger audience, do you see doing work on a different level?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very layered question.
Sure, take your time.
Let's start with the first part that, like I said, I am a research queen, and there are, what does that mean? I, if there's a song that speaks to me, is if there's an audio clip that speaks to me, I want to create a story behind it. I feel as an entertainer, as an illusionist, you have, it's more than just the illusion of appearance. You have to make the audience believe that you are really singing this song. So I feel there has to be an emotion behind it. There has to be something going on in your head. Because I always say, I'm not going to do a song because I like it.
Right. Yeah.
And I feel a lot of people do that. You do you, but I'm going to do me.
Yeah.
And I have to create that storyline for myself. And there are times that I don't, I have, like, mixes or, like, playlist of songs that I want to put together or whatever, but I just haven't gotten that right clip that will connect everything. Where was I? Okay, the next level to the question. Yes, I see myself that I have the artistic director eye.
Yes,
I think down the road I would love to be some sort of artistic director, which probably that means I have to get into some sort of directing, which is hard for me because I still want to be performing, and I don't necessarily want to be a performer and a director off the get-go. I still feel I need more... not experience, but I need more opportunities as a performer outside of just Pixie. So, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of stories I want to tell. It's just, one, having the time, two, energy, and one, just the opportunity or something needs to come up.
Do you think about, I guess, what about, like, something that's not... I mean, we marvel because there's at least the shows that we've been going to in Fire Island to see you... It's, I mean, it really is like a happening. The audience is so excited and so packed, and I've never seen people just like throwing money, you know, they're just like, I mean, they're like, this is actually going to be making like decent money for her on these nights, you know, but like, do you think about doing something more, not necessarily narrative, but like of a piece, of a whole evening, selling tickets kind of thing?
Absolutely. I almost put up a show earlier this year, a 2-person show, The Story of My Life. It was on Broadway with Malcolm Getz. And
no way.
I was going to put it out, just me. Like, I would fund it at the Laura Beachman. But then I started listening to the music, and I was speaking to my friend who would have been the music director. And I was just like, there's just so many things about it that I want to change.
Sure.
And he was like, you just know that you can't really do that. And I'm like, all right. And I thought more about it, and I was like, that just means I have to write my own stuff.
Yeah, totally.
So, there's happening? I don't know. A few years ago, one of the owner of Barracuda, Elmo, and Industry, we had a meeting. We have a meeting like once a year or whatever. And he was like talking about my show, Barracuda. He was like, so what do you want to do? Like, I already had been there for a while, and he was just trying to like get more sales. And I was like, I don't know. He's like, is there a story you want to tell? And at that point, I was like, no, I really don't know. But now... really focusing in on who I am, I realize that I've become a representation for the Latinx LGBTQ community, mm-hmm. and I have a platform from that. And I'm tired of waiting to see myself represented in media in general. Mm-hmm. And there are... I still don't see my stories. Like, just because it's a drag queen or whatnot, that doesn't mean it's completely me. There's a lot of Latin kids out there. They're still growing up with this very machismo ideal surrounding them, sure. environment. And it's still very prevalent. We're just breaking into general stories, and I don't want to like say like, oh, we need to like show more of the sad side, because to be honest, my experience was not that negative. I actually pretty had a very positive experience, and maybe it was the way I was brought up that I just was told not to give a shit, and I really haven't given a shit. But I know that there is still chances for me to there are stories. Like, there's a movie called Viva, which I think it was beautifully done. Ironically, it was done by an Irish production company, and it takes place, and the story is about a Cuban gay boy who wants to become a drag queen. That's not why I'm interested in the movie. It's just that it was about a gay boy.
Yeah.
And there were many...
What year was this movie from?
This was in 2015.
Oh, so recent.
And it was a potential Oscar foreign film movie.
Oh.
But it was not in the actual final list.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what... But, I mean, it is kind of awkward that an Irish production company... Because it would have been an Irish selection.
Right.
So maybe that was what went through.
They don't get their, like, outreach points if it's an Irish company.
Or, I don't know, or, like, it was about Cuba. It was weird. It was weird. But it was an amazing movie, and I was just like, I wish more people would have seen that, because I don't feel people have.
Well, I will definitely watch
Me
it.
Me too, for sure.
Subtitles, so watch out.
Hablo español, but not Irish, though. Just a brogue.
Well, so... You know, I was telling Ben, after seeing your show so many times, and we bring our friends to see it, and they're all so impressed with you.
And we brought our 12-year-old trans friend from San Francisco. We snuck him in.
Yeah. What?
My friend has this 12-year-old trans son, this gay guy in San Francisco.
Yeah. When?
This last
Monday.
Week. They came to visit, and because his husband loves... he wanted to go to the closing of the prom on Broadway. So they came in for that.
Okay, gotcha.
And they came out for the night. And so we brought them, and we came in the back way during the Broadway thing. It was kind of chill. And he just looks kind of like a twink. You know, so it's sort of, like, passable. And, but Ken was the best. Like, nobody else, like, raised, and Ken came over to, like, take our, Ken's the waiter at Ice Palace.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And he's like, whose nephew is this? He's like, I was like, oh, thanks, Ken. He's like, yeah, well, I live in reality. And then he moves on.
Yeah, but he loved it.
He loved it. And he was like, I don't really like drag queens. My mom's, like, obsessed with Dina Martina.
Okay. That is such a common thing.
Yeah.
I'm no fault to him. But there's just so many people that come up to me, and they're like, I didn't like drag. And I was like, I don't know if I like that statement.
Yeah.
But it's based on ignorance, because it's an ignorant way to look at something that is a genre, and just, you know, it's almost like a group of people. I mean, there's just so much, identity within it. But I understand. It's like people saying they don't like Broadway, you know, because it means something to them.
And I love Broadway, but there are certain stuff that I'm not going to listen to, because it's just like, that's some cheesy shit.
But you know enough about Broadway to be able to see there's shows that are going to be like that and shows that aren't. But if somebody sees, you know, you talk about those girls that are just like, I like this song, so I'm going to lip sync to it, you know, and I have a pretty dress.
Yeah.
It falls under the same drag umbrella as what you do, even though that's insane.
Absolutely.
You know?
Totally.
I mean, and, well, you changed, you know, one 12-year-old.
Yeah, I changed a 12-year-old.
A newly open mind about it.
The children are our future.
Yeah, absolutely.
But everyone we take to see you is so impressed by you, and they say, oh my God, she just gives so much on stage, she gives so much energy. How do you maintain that, and how do you, you know, on your off time when you're not performing, how do you build that back up and, you know, reserve that for the stage? Do you have, you know, routines or practices like meditation or whatever that you use to
Well, it's definitely really hard.
Because you work every night, basically.
I don't drink.
Oh, you don't drink at all?
Well, no, I mean, I do drink. I've stopped a lot. But I don't drink before the show. And if I drink during the show, I never even finished a glass.
Yeah, I watched that Cuba Libre get ignored for the entire time. Well,
I just forget about it. Like, maybe because it's behind me so I don't see it. But
And when you do drink it, honestly, you look more thirsty, dry mouth than like actually like, it's good alcohol.
And it goes the same for the rest of my shows. I don't maybe like take a shot at my Tuesday show because it's just part of the opening thing. But yeah, I really don't drink. I don't do drugs. Like, I don't know how these queens do it that are like bumpa, bumpa, bumpa. And I'm just like, how? But I also like to wake up the next day at a reasonable hour. I don't want to waste it away. And then I also take a nap if I can right before I have to get ready. Just to recharge a little bit. And I reserve my energy. I'm not doing drag to party.
Right.
And go out and hang out. I mean, it's every night. Like, I don't need to.
What is the process? You have these weekly gigs night after night after night. And, like, you know, every time I've seen you, it's been a totally different show. I mean, much more so, it seems, than you would even need to do as far as
audiences
or presenters. I mean, you could get away with recycling a lot more material. But maybe part of why it's just so electric is because it has that dangerous, you know, quality of just being new. But so when you have a new stuff, do you then do the same or some of the new stuff, at least all the gigs that week? I mean, you know, is the Barracuda show one night similar to the Ice Palace show that same week?
Maybe a song, but I have a playlist for all of my shows since 2015, 2014 on my iTunes list. So I literally go back and I see what worked, what or what I could change or like freshen up. But that's just me. That's just my OCD, I guess, that I don't want someone to be like, oh, she's doing that again. And if I do something again, it's because the audience requested it.
Right.
I'm never... there's songs that I don't even do because someone is going to ask for it. So I just don't bother to put it on my regular playlist. It's hard to keep it fresh up. And it's just on me because I'm like, people are going to see the same Broadway show over and over again. People are going to gonna see an artist do their same songs. But for some reason, I'm like, well, since I ain't doing none of my original songs, I have to... just keep it changing, and it's just for me too. Same for costumes. I like try to keep that rotating too, even though I have a full walk-in closet. I'm still like, I have nothing to wear.
Do you make your own costumes and stuff, or do you?
The simpler stuff. I definitely design it now, and I have several people that I work with. I barely have time for me. I hate doing hair, but I have to like. If it's something easy that I doesn't have to be uber styled, I'll.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen you in the same hair.
Yeah,
it's there. It's definitely happens when I'm extremely exhausted, especially after coming back from Ireland. There's a good shake and go onto wig.
Yes, queen.
You know, people are always asking me if I'm on Ozempic, and let me tell you, I do not mind them asking me that. But I'm not on Ozempic. They especially ask me that when they see me eating dessert or desserts or all the crap I eat when I'm out. But my secret is that when I'm home, when I'm by myself, I'm eating Factor. Factor sends me restaurant-quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever I am. No prepping, no cooking, no cleanup except for, like, my fork. And now you can enjoy Factor Meals too. Go to factormeals.com/giantsinthesky50 and use code giantsinthesky50 to get 50% off. That's code giantsinthesky50 at factormeals.com/giantsinthesky50 to get 50% off.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And but then, it looks good.
Are you working just with different DJs everywhere you go?
Let's see. DJ Two-Face, I work twice. And then my Sunday show is different. Wednesday show is different. Two-Face.
Because I imagine you need, like, some tech time then wherever you are to deal with. I mean,
no.
You're just calling out the cues.
I just do it off the whim. And I've just learned that I need to give my DJ enough time if I tell him to do something. Like, I can be like, oh, play this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it's just quiet. Like, it's a learning process. Mm-hmm. And it's part of just being a host and an MC. Like, just being able to riff.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the audience, too.
I'm glad you brought that up, too, because that is such an interesting skill that, in a way, is different from acting, this sense of, like, being a host and an MC. Mm-hmm. And it's complementary, you know, and it's. I think maybe it's more common among theater actors than, like, film and television actors.
Totally.
But it's still a separate skill. And sometimes I think maybe it's actually more what it's about even than, like, the acting. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys saw, like... like when Sean Combs was in Raisin in the Sun on Broadway.
No, I didn't.
I mean, he was like in between Felicia Rashad and Audra McDonald, you know?
Right.
And he kind of held his own because he knows how to work the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a play, you know? And even though I'm sure lots of men have played that part with more nuance, he was not an embarrassment compared to, like, you know, Michelle Williams in Cabaret, who's one of the greatest actresses. I mean, look at her in Fosse Verdon. It's like changed my life.
Yeah.
But in Cabaret, she was not nearly as good as Sean Combs was in Raisin in the Sun.
Right.
You know, and I think it's like that, and I think it's very much that thing that a drag queen has to do.
Totally.
You know.
Well, and I was commenting on that after your last show as well. Like, you know, when there are those Hell's Kitchen queens who get up there and are living their fantasy and, like,
too much.
You know,
the guy that did the worm
voguing
on the stage
and, like, jumping
week.
On stage and, like, throwing dollars at you, you react so perfectly to that because you don't get angry and, like, you know, shut them down and say, like, get the fuck off my stage, but you also don't, like, just let them do it. You kind of just, like, make it a part of the act when you kind of give them a little look that's so funny and the audience goes wild for it, but they know, like, that you're in control.
But, and we don't feel like they've interrupted the show. We feel like you've chewed them up and made it a part of the show, and you're still in control, and the entertainment is still at a high level.
And that's
very
much a learning experience too.
Yeah.
I remember being when I first started, I would maybe come across angry or whatever, but I've learned that it's just not about me. It's them trying to get focused, kind of laugh, but then it's just if you allow them to, or if you put yourself in a position where you come across mad or something, it just doesn't help. But yeah, there's a few times. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a few times where people do cross the line, and I'm like, hey,
lay it down,
lay it down, and then we go like, okay, let's go back.
Yeah.
Can you, like, clock, like, from the moment you step on stage? Can you, like, clock those people in the audience who are going to be an issue?
Totally. In the first number, I can just tell when people are just a little too rowdy and a little too much feeling their fantasy.
Feel the fantasy.
And I feel. People think that they can do that with drag queens.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Because we are so connected with the audience. And because we're joking with other people. Or we're, like, being physical with other people. That they think that not only they can do that during a show or a number, but they can do that afterwards as well.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of times where people are, like, go straight to touch my hair. Or straight to, like, touch my boob. And I'm just like... Why do you think you can do that to me? Even if I joke with someone physically, I'm never literally touching them.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So why do you think that you can do that to me? Yeah. I'm like a living doll that you can just take advantage of. And I'm like, no, I'm still a person.
Yeah.
You would not like that if I did that to you out of drag.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Does the number that you're doing affect... your attitude in terms of that? Like, I mean, if you're singing It's Not Right But It's Okay, do you feel more emboldened to respond to things as opposed to something?
I mean the lyrics go along with that.
Right,
2 weeks ago, I don't know if you guys were there, but I was doing God, what was the song? Carrie Monolakis. Yeah, it was Carrie Monolakis' Creep. And it was the finale of Drag Suicide, or as we call it, TRL now, Total Request Lip Sync. Total Request Lip Sync. And then there was someone who comes to the show all the time, and she like came and like tried to tip me like right at the peak of the emotion of the song, and it, like in the silent part, and she literally was like, and I was like, go away, go away. She's like, sorry, like loud enough that everybody could hear. But yeah, it just, I think people, especially come to my show, sort of know what the journey is. There's a lot of people that come that have only experienced like the usual drag show, like come out, do a number, they leave, somebody hosts, and it's just back and forth. But this is like a 2-hour marathon that it's a very loosely written, sorted out show, but it's still a show.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I mean, talking of like other kinds of drag shows, I mean, obviously you're just working a lot, so you're busy and, you know, your work is at night, but today you're going to see Moulin Rouge. You do go see things, you know. Do among the things that you spend your time on, do you see other drag shows? Do you watch Drag Race? Like, what is your relationship to drag outside of your own?
Yeah, you said it. It's hard. It's almost every night. So that means that I would have to go to another bar. And if I'm in drag, I really don't want to be there. It's not that I don't want to support other girls. It's just I don't really want to be in it every second of my life. Same goes with theater. I remember when I was in school, I would get ready in my dressing room with other music, not theater. I just want to be outside of that world until I have to be in it. I don't know. It's just my own sanity.
Well, but that's also, I mean, I think part of the attraction to newer shows like Hamilton or Hadestown is because they don't sound like that same insular theater music, you know, that, like, I think so much of Broadway is, like, so, like, feeding on itself like that, that it becomes inaccessible to anybody else in the world. I mean, I think it makes you a better artist to be bringing different things into it, whatever they are.
So drag, I just need to, I need to be able to step away from it. I mean, I try to go see, and if I come across it, I'll watch drag shows. But yeah, it's hard for me to go see other people, and I really don't watch Drag Race anymore.
Well, it's, I mean, we're season 11, is it now? I mean, it's so, a long time to watch anything. But were you at one point a fan?
At one point I was, in the beginning. And then I feel like I would only watch it because I had friends on it. But yeah, I just, what I am a fan of is good material. And I watch a lot of shows, TV shows and movies. I feel that's where I get a lot of inspiration, even if it doesn't affect me drag directly. I just good written material just helps as an actor, as a performer. And when you see it,
I mean, that comes across, you know, in the quality of your work and in the diversity of
the material
that you choose. I mean, and you know, I mean, hearing you say "Blessed be the fruit" or whatever, you know, it's like, so I mean, it's obvious that we're watching somebody that has like
a deep cultural knowledge.
You know, and from a sophisticated angle that you know informs it all. But I mean, I think we all like, I mean, that so many people, that is the kind of drag that, you know, that we respond to, you know, as opposed to like, I mean, I'll say it. We saw, what's her name?
Aquaria.
We saw Aquaria's show at the Pavilion. It was not that. I mean, but there's, you know, there's lots of room for all kinds of things. I mean, we also saw Shangela at that same time.
Who was nothing fabulous.
Like neither you nor Aquaria. I mean, it was like a Kathy Griffin show, and it was just so funny and like relatable.
Yeah, she's she's great on the mic, and that's why so she's been able to be so successful without winning.
But I mean,
justice for Shangela.
But I mean, I think it's frustrating as a fan to watch you and not see you getting that exposure. You know, like, I mean, what's your, like,
But
I'm sure you've tried out a because everybody has to in this day.
What are you going to say before?
Well, before we'll let you, you know, tell that story, but I think, I honestly don't even know, like, you're someone I feel like who needs to have your own, like, you need to be able to write, produce, and star in your own, like, television show, you know? You're so smart, and, like, you have such a director's eye, and you have such a deep knowledge of, like, what's good material, what's well-written, what an audience needs to see that, you know, I was telling Ben in Fire Island, I want to see, like, a Seinfeld-type show, but, like, you know, kind of meta like that, like about you as a drag queen.
Got
you know, kind
it. Of like oh, Jerry was interesting. Like a stand-up. Yeah.
But I want to see it like your life in New York, the character of Pixie, you know, Mary Tyler Moore was Mary Richards. It could be like Pixie, yeah. like, you know, adventure or something. It could be like not your real name, whatever. But that could be your, you know, kind of fictional show based on your life.
Come on, I'm Ellen.
Yeah, exactly. We're like Ellen, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I think, you know, something that we well, would die to see from you.
Well, to go from your question
Thank
to that
you.
Question, there is an arc there. There is, yeah, I've auditioned. Yeah, it's sort of common compliments to be like, oh my God, you're so amazing, you should be a Drag Race. At first, it was a compliment. Mm-hmm. Then it was just like, whatever. And then it became... not irritating, but just like, is that my only way of success?
Yeah.
And I feel that's the general public's idea of success for drag queen is to be on the show. And it's frustrating because you're only saying that I can be successful through that show.
Right.
And I'm not saying that the show is not a great platform for that. It has been a great platform for that. It's opened up so many doors. People that I've never probably would have seen drag see it now. But I now think it's time for the next step.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm hopefully going to be in that next step.
Oh, you are.
I don't want to be a part of 100-something queens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not saying that some of them are, but yeah, I think it's time for the next step. And I've been talking to my agents. I'm signed with MSA. that I think I really want my Netflix opportunity.
Yeah,
I think that is...
Yeah, that's so perfect.
I need... And there we go again, that I am, like, way depending on someone else's opportunity. But, yeah, I just feel... Because Netflix has been able to just tell so many stories that haven't been told, and it's just so out there that maybe it's not Netflix, maybe it's Hulu, who knows, but maybe it's HBO. But it's...
Well, there's so many. I mean, that's the great thing now. Or Amazon. Or
yeah,
like
Netflix
AOL
pushed everybody.
Is getting in the game.
Netflix
I mean,
pushed everybody to like, give other opportunities. And I think that's going to be something that I'm perhaps get into.
Totally.
Maybe, hopefully.
I mean, like, I mean, I was, my fantasy, and this is not long term, but just like, I would love to see a documentary about you, like, very, like, kind of like 1970s gritty, like, just like getting, like, in the Uber to the gig, like, you know, making the playlist of the tracks for that night's show, like, combing out the wig, riding on the Long Island Expressway, just like going through it, you know, and then, like, to the, because, I mean, it's funny to think about, like, you know, I mean, even something like the Ice Palace, when you're there 2 hours earlier in Fire Island seeing the Broadway night, you know, I mean, someone wrote, it features Broadway's most available talent. And, like, you know, that can, and that's no shade to any of people. I mean, lots of fabulous people have done that gig, you know, but, like, it's, but, you know, but you feel like you're at the hotel, the motel, in the lounge, you're here on vacation, this is who's here this week, you gotta do something after dinner, you go watch it, you know?
Oh my God, I've never seen it like that.
You know, I mean, it's, you know, it's fun, but it's very like, you know, I mean, Wanda Sykes walks in just while she's drinking her beer for 20 minutes, it's like...
She's never seen my show.
Well, she
never?
Needs to stay, because it would change her life. But like, you know, but it's something... It's something different, you know, and this is not even just about you. I mean, it is a thing also about drag that even the worst drag show, just the fact that somebody has put on this like elaborate getup, it takes it to that other you know, level of excitement and screaming. I mean, that's why when a drag queen, even a Busted, Bad One, lip syncs Whitney Houston, they assume a little bit of that glory, yes. You know, that isn't there when actually a really beautiful, talented girl with an insane voice could sing that song live.
Right.
But it's a little bit like the motel at the pool, like, you know, showroom. And, like, I wonder how much, like, that comes in. I mean, for example, like, Freddie Mercury is your other one.
Yes.
Who's, like, who's not a drag queen and is an out gay man and, you know, was.
Well.
And
was at the end. But yeah, he's.
But was flamboyant and.
And didn't give a shit.
Didn't give a shit.
It was his showmanship, I think, that. I mean, and his voice that attracted me to him. But I think it was his showmanship. There's just something about him. A super rock star that is just. Yeah. And when I found him, which. God, I don't even remember when I found him, but it was definitely later on. When I was coming into my gay self and really embracing it, I think it's when I finally found it. So I would say maybe college. I probably heard the music, but actual Freddie Mercury was probably college.
Because when you're a kid, you know a lot of those songs, and you don't know that they're him or that they're gay or anything. Everybody knows We Are the Champions and We Will Rock
and
You.
And that is Bohemian the magic Rhapsody. Of him.
Yeah.
That even though people heard speculations, even though they might be the most biased, straight, conservative thinker, they still sing those songs.
Yeah.
I work every day of my life. I work till I ache my bones. At the end
of the day,
I take home my heart away.
That's amazing, and that's powerful. YouTube helps with Freddie, for sure.
Yeah.
Did you see the movie that was
recently
came out? What were your thoughts? So it seemed very polarizing.
It wasn't perfect, but Rami did an amazing job. And I'm glad they were like, well, we're not going to find anyone that's going to look like him and sing like him. Mm-hmm. So you're going to lip sync. But he did the first transitional, like anything that was soft or like in an actual range. So he was able to do a great job. I think some story plots were obviously shifted for cinematic illusion, whatever. Uh-huh. But I'm glad that some of his gay story was told, besides the news reels that you see on YouTube of him passing or why he passed.
Right.
So I was happy with that.
Are there gay or any kind of like queer music stars now that you're into? I don't know, like Frank Ocean or like Rufus Wainwright or anything, you know?
Actually, I went through a really big Rufus Wainwright phase. Mm-hmm. Vincent right now. Carl Cully. I'm just found them. These are like stars that are just up and coming. God, what's his name? Oh my God, I'm going to look at my phone real quick.
How do you find these new artists? Are you on Spotify or
I do a lot of Apple Music. And I just do, every Friday they upload new playlists of artists, and that's where I found a lot of my artists and a lot of people that that I like inject into my show that people have not heard of. Jawan Crawley, he's actually in Aladdin.
I know that name.
So these are three queer artists. Obviously, Years and Years, Ollie. But yeah, I'm starting to really push for more. Muna, who I discovered 2 years ago. No one was doing their music, and now everyone's doing their music. They did the song I Know a Place. They wrote it right after Pulse, and I feel like now that song is finally getting traction. And I'm like, it's an amazing song.
I know a place. I know a place we can go. Forever we
But yeah, I love finding new queer artists. But at the same time, I don't know if I can do it. Not because I can't. It's just, I don't know. I'm like, just because I like a song, like I said, doesn't mean I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. Like I need,
sure.
I need something.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. What about in terms of like in this, you know, I mean, political climate, I mean, just like this fuckery that we're living in now around the world mm-hmm. and, you know, shockingly here. Does that change? Do you feel the audiences are more excited or more willing to go somewhere dangerous? Or, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, in a literal way, you have that great Anna Navarro thing that's in the show.
Yeah.
Has that changed the kind of energy or experience that you get from the audience?
I've realized that, because I had a talk show on a Tuesday night. That night has gone through an evolution. But it was a talk show, and it was called Late Night Tea. We were treating it like a late night show on TV. And
this was live at a bar?
Yeah, it was live at a bar. And we would still do numbers, but there was a lot of talking, you know, like my Q&A.
Yeah.
But it was more like open to a discussion. Mm-hmm. And somebody like brought up some Republican view or something like that. And the conversation got heated to the point where I was just like, this is not a good idea anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nobody really wants to do this at a bar. Nobody mm-hmm. wants to get this serious on Tuesday at a midnight. Mm-hmm. So I started to regroup. It was with someone else. It was a duo show. And when they were let go and I was regrouping and sort of rethinking the show, I was just like, you know what? People just want to just have fun. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to drag shows, we do have those pixie Q&A moments.
Yeah.
But it's a lot more, I made it about me. Like, what do you want
to
know
Get
about
to know
me?
Your drag queen. Yeah.
And as an entertainer, as a comic, it's the learning thing that you just don't realize, but when you connect to someone by making fun of yourself, it becomes better. Everyone's on the same boat. But when you're just saying something that might trigger someone's view or whatever, it becomes unbalanced.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if we're all on the same boat, and I think it becomes better, and I think that's why people go to bars, go to see drag shows, whatever. They just don't want to think. They just want to, like, laugh and have fun. So that's what my view has been.
But you do have that element, though. I mean, I think, you know, in a way, when you see your brothers and sisters on the streets and you know each other.
Well, yeah. Well, no, that's different. That's a positive.
Sure.
But
I mean, 3 or 4 years ago, if I heard that at a drag show, I'd be like, yeah, free to be you and me. And yet, you know, now you say it and it's like revolutionary every time I like have goosebumps because it just feels like everything feels so dangerous and toxic in the world.
Yes, but I'm also not saying it just to say it. I'm not just like, be good to your friends, whatever. Like, once again, I'm connecting it to actual everyday encounters. Everyday, like, when I say, like, you're walking down the street, you're looking at your phone. Why are you looking at your phone? These are all things that people are like, you know, you do that. Yeah. They'll never say it.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone does it. Everyone looks at their phone when they're passing by a stranger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do it, too, and I have to catch myself.
Mm-hmm.
You go into an elevator, and there's someone else, and you don't say anything.
Yeah.
Like, these are all things people do. And it's just sort of like that, I don't know if it's a fear of connection, but it's just maybe feeling like, I don't want to be bothered, so I'm not going to bother them.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, a hello and an elevator,
it
just makes someone day, or like you just never know what they're going to do.
Yeah, it changes the whole trajectory.
Yeah.
It is weird, though, like in the gay world, you know, like in Fire Island, we talk about this, like walking on the boardwalk, and you come like face to face, you know, and if it's like someone who's like, you know, old or fat, you know, you feel more confident because, you know, it doesn't feel like you're hitting on them. So then it's like a warm smile. How's it going? They're nice back. When you see these, like, hot, like, attitude-y looking guys who might be the nicest person in the world, it's harder to get up the, like, confidence, you know.
I don't care. I've done it, and I've gotten both responses.
Yeah.
I've gotten, like, hey, or nothing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? Like, really, does it really hurt you that much?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To, like, mm-hmm. say hi or acknowledge someone else that you may or may not want to have sex with?
Yeah.
Right.
And that's not about you.
I'm glad you said that, because you've said that in the show, and I didn't bring that. But it is, I forgot it, but it does feel like it's a part of it. It's almost mm-hmm. like,
I don't want to waste my time.
Based on sex.
Yes.
So somehow it's like, it's presumed that you want to have sex with
exactly.
somebody.
Exactly. Yeah. Know? When you're not.
But don't you think as a kid, like, we develop this, like, bitchy face so that we don't give the wrong impression and encourage, like, unwanted attention or something?
I don't know if it's as a kid, because...
Not, you know, we're like, as an adolescent or...
Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, it's definitely in high school. Like, you don't want to be, like, show that you like someone.
Yeah.
Because that means... they have something on you or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I do. But I feel as we're growing up, we have to, like, grow out of that and
yeah.
just become an adult. And that's being part of an adult. Mm-hmm. It's being able to have a conversation. And that's also something that we are lacking in as a society, is just being able to have a conversation face to face. And not people are so comfortable on their phone or through a computer wall that we're just... we can talk all we want there. As soon as we're in front of each other, it's just like that awkward silence. It's like, mm-hmm. no.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's a problem. We should be able to have a conversation. And I don't think that helps with being able to grow out of that. Well, I don't want to say hi or anything, because that might seem like I'm into someone.
Yeah. Mm,
right.
I mean, you seem so, like, well-adjusted, and, like, you have such a, like, healthy, like, perspective on all this. I mean, did you have years of therapy? Like, how did you get
there? I just didn't give a shit. You know, growing up, I just saw people, adults around me, that I perceived as... they're adults. They have all the answers. And as I grew older, and I started coming into myself, and I, people started to know that I was gay,
mm-hmm.
and it's a Latin thing, maybe. I mean, that's my experience. But everybody talks to everybody else about someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started seeing that more and more. I just realized, oh, y'all are full of shit. Mm-hmm. Okay, y'all are pretending like you got your shit together, but you really don't. And that just sort of triggered me to, like, be upfront. And if people consider that to be bitchy, I'm like, it's honest. I'm being mm-hmm. honest with you. Do you want me to, like, be fake to you?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not being mean. You think it's mean, but it's not. But yeah, that was it. There are a lot of men in my family that I don't respect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like a... oh, fuck them. Not that. It's very much a... You might think that I'm less of a man that you are, but you are actually not a well-rounded man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, for me, that just sort of, I guess, taught me without knowing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, I mean, that's hard to get to. I mean, a lot of people
can say that,
but they don't feel that strength.
I just don't know. I really don't know. And it's maybe... these artists that I'm influenced by.
Yeah.
That,
thank you for bringing it full circle for
right? And maybe it is that, because people are like, who are your, like, drag icons? And I was like, I really don't have drag icons.
Yeah.
I mean, that didn't really come up to later on when I actually was like, okay, maybe I'm gonna do drag. So these people that I saw that were just out of the box, and I'm just like, okay. I mean, even people that were troubled, like Judy, like,
mm-hmm.
you see them and you're like, they're still putting it up. They're still doing it.
Yeah, yeah. And being honest and not hiding and engaging with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, the audience. Well, that brings us to our game.
We play a little game with our guests.
Okay.
It's a variation on Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Okay.
It's Dolly Concert Kill. And we're going to give you three performers.
Oh, God.
And you choose one that you want to see as Dolly Levi in Hello, Dolly. One that you want to see in a peak career concert, and one that you will kill.
Okay.
So Whitney has to be on
for
that
sure.
list.
Oh.
Cheetah Rivera, because I know you love her.
Oh,
yes.
God.
And,
Judy.
Judy, for sure.
Oh, fuck.
Judy, Cheetah.
Judy, Cheetah, Whitney.
Whitney.
I love
the triumvirate.
Ugh. Okay, I would have... Oh, my God, I can't believe I have to answer this. I'm thinking logistically on who would be a good Dolly out of those three, and I would mm-hmm. say Judy. I'm going to have to kill Cheetah. That's not... That's not fair.
Yeah.
That's not fair. I saw Cheetah at Carnegie a few years ago, and that was amazing. But I mean, I would want to see Whitney at her concert.
That,
oh my God,
that's pretty respectable.
That was.
I don't think any listeners rough. Could take issue with
right,
those choices.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Cheetah's not a Dolly. Not. I don't know. Think she couldn't. I think she could do it, but I think Judy would be just.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that was rough, you guys. She's we apologize. Cheetah is one of my people. Okay.
Sorry, Cheetah, if you're listening.
All right.
So can you do just a quick run through of like your weekly gigs?
Sure.
Just in case anyone wants to attend.
Sunday evening at Barracuda Midnight Show. Monday on Fire Island at 11:30 at the Ice Palace Cherry
And
Grove.
How long into the fall does that go?
That goes into Labor Day. So Memorial Day to Labor Day.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesdays at Hardware at 11 p.m. Wednesdays at Therapy at 11 p.m. Scruff app, that's for the gays listening. It's on your app. I do hosting. It's a live trivia show, just like HQ, but it's mm-hmm. made for and for the gays, by the gays. Mm-hmm. And you can win money. Friday, it's every other week until the holidays come. It's Distorted Disney mm-hmm. and at the Laurie Beachman on 42nd. And I've been there for... over 7 years now, and it's you can get tickets through www.spincyclenyc.com. Our holiday shows are Cracked Christmas. There's a Halloween show and a Pride show as well, and then my Saturdays are usually travel. It depends on like if I have a Friday off. Like this next week, I'm in Canada for Friday, so. Yeah, I usually have weekends for that because, ironically, in New York, you don't really need shows in the weekend.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, that always surprised me.
Because everybody else, I mean, it's just such a cabaret, like, city. Like, you just go see shows during the week. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to be at a bar on a weekend. Like,
do you go see cabaret shows? Like, are you, like, a 54 Below Joe's Pub regular kind of person?
No. I mean, it really depends mm-hmm. if it's someone that I really want to see.
Have you ever sung in any of those? Like, when they're like, 54 Below sings West Side Story or, you know...
No, I haven't. I went to one. What did I go to? Oh, I went to my... I went to go see Hunter Hurlicka.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
yeah.
Ryan. Yeah. We did Utah Shakespeare Festival when we were both in college.
Oh, wow.
We've been friends since. Our careers have taken very different routes.
Somebody was just telling us a story about Nathan Lee Graham was the MC and Hunter was Cliff in Cabaret. And Elaine Stritch came to see it because they were, BFFs.
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember that. But we were in Fiddler on the Roof together.
Oh.
I was Nachum the Beggar, a Jewish son, a chuppah carrier, and the principal Russian dancer.
Love it.
And he was the tailor. What's his name?
Motel Kamzoil. Motel Kamzoil.
Motel. yeah, so...
Well, look, we got some Broadway trivia, too.
And you're on your Pixie Aventura on social media.
Everything. Yes.
Everything.
And Venmo.
Fabulous to follow.
And Venmo. Yeah, send money. Yes.
And
send
Venmo.
Money. Well, we love you. And
thank you so much
for
being with
this.
Us.
Thank you. We talked about one album.
Well, that's how it goes. Apparently.
All right. Thanks, Pixie.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Benra Milauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. For more episodes, visit Broadway World, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts do be.
Come back next week as we continue our special Winter in a Summertown mini-season featuring the most fabulous talents from Provincetown and Fire Island.
Next up, legendary Jeffrey Roberson, a.k.a. Varla Jean Merman, coming in to talk about the original cast album of The Mad Show.
After Varla Jean, we'll be chatting with Linda Etter and Miss Richfield 1981.
This episode is recorded at the Green Room 42 in New York City and was edited by me, Daniel Nolan.
Thanks to Emmy-winning composer and lyricist Lance Horn for the Broken Records theme song.
Follow us both, Ben Rimmelauer and Daniel Nolan, on all y'all socials.
That's Ben Rimmelauer. BenRimmelauer.
And that's Nolan with an E, not Nolan with an A.
Because Nolan with an A is an ass.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.